Hi. So here's a quick review and some tips and pearls on the insertion of pleural pigtail catheters. I put this together for our residents who learn to do this procedure and certainly over the space of a few weeks should get a few of these in, period. As a brief intro, they're a very practical catheter. I like to use the Fuhrman set from Cook, which is an 8.5 and also comes in 14. This isn't a particular plug for this. I use it, I like it. I'm sure there's probably some other decent sets out there. In perspective, I used to put in central lines before we had anything available back in the early 2000s when the choice was between putting a traditional chest tube. Or putting in a central line to drain a plane effusion. I used to put in central lines. Then we got these, which drain much better because the pigtail structure obviously makes for less clogging and clotting. Major advantages to using a pigtail drainage versus traditional chest tube is comfort, pain. So oftentimes patients who had chest tubes, especially for uncomplicated effusions. Would require narcotics, and with narcotics comes either, some degree of somnolence, constipation, etc., etc. So much better tolerated. Generally speaking, these 8.5 catheters are essentially painless once they're in, and the insertion is really minimal discomfort. So a couple of tips. These should always be done ultrasound guided so that you find the best spot. Some people have this habit of turning the patient, which, in terms of a non-loculated, free-flowing effusion, makes no sense at all. When you turn the patient, the level of the fluid stays the same. So all that results in is a more posterior insertion of the pigtail. With that more posterior insertion, patients end up lying on the pigtail more often. You get more kinks, so the drainage not as good, more discomfort, etc., etc. So, for a free-flowing effusion, don't turn your patient. A little tip on spotting. I do most of my pigtail insertions spotted. That means I take a look with the ultrasound, I choose my spot, and then do it quote-unquote blind. So, for using a proper spotting, important things is once you've spotted, don't move the patient anymore. Because if the patient moves, whether the head, the bed goes up, they turn a little bit, then the spot that you used is no longer valid. So don't make sure your patient doesn't move after you've chosen your spot. When you choose your spot, make sure that your ultrasound probe is flush, flat against the patient's chest, as much as possible, 90 degrees to all angles. So that when you go back with your needle without the ultrasound, you know that if you've marked that spot, you can go in that spot straight in and not at a funny angle. Because, especially for patients who have a thick chest wall, the angle that you'd take with your needle would result in a radically different spot than you chose. Sometimes it doesn't matter much if the effusion is really massive, but sometimes it does. So just get into the habit of putting your ultrasound probe just simply flat against the skin and at 90 degrees to horizontal and vertical as much as possible. After that, once you've started, make sure you go on the rib. So I like to freeze in a straight line right over the rib, freeze the rib itself, then without angling your needle, just kind of pull the needle and the tissue slightly anteriorly, usually anterosuperiorly for the angle of the rib, and go ahead and puncture the pleura. I like to hit the pleural fluid with the freezing needle, so I've got a muscle memory and I know I'm in the right spot before going with my larger bore introducer needle. Once you've got good fluid, then you can go with your introducer needle. Repeat the process when you hit fluid with your introducer needle, it's important to have part of your hand stay in contact with the patient, the other hand hold the hub of the introducer needle as you remove your syringe. That way, the depth relationship of the needle to the patient remains the same. You're controlling it. If I'm supervising a procedure, I never want to see a needle just sticking out of a chest with no hand controlling the depth. If you don't have part of that control hand also touching the patient, not just the hub of the needle, if your attention isn't wholly focused on that, it can go in and out. So that's why I always like to tell residents to keep one part of your hand against the patient's chest wall, the other two fingers holding the needle. That way that relationship doesn't change. You don't go in, you don't go out. Because obviously if you go out, you've got to repeat the process to some degree. If you go in, you're going to have to be careful that you don't hit the lung. Let's just backtrack a little bit. When you choose your spot using ultrasound, depending on the size of the effusion, ideally you want to pick a spot where you've got a few centimeters of fluid below your needle, so that you've got that space. You've got that that extra leeway in case the needle does go in, for whatever reason, you have less risk of injuring the lung. However, in some cases, you might be doing a diagnostic tap in which there isn't a whole lot of fluid. I remember tapping an apex of a pleural effusion to rule out malignancy, and there was only maybe 5 millimeters of fluid. In those cases, I don't do those taps blind. And of course, this isn't referring necessarily to a pigtail insertion. But if it were, essentially the smaller your fluid collection is, then you should possibly move to doing an actual fully guided ultrasound procedure so that you actually visualize your needle tip, which does involve generally using a surface probe so you can visualize the length of your needle as you're going in. All right, so back to the pigtail insertion. A few tips and pearls. So this may vary if you've got different kits, but for this Cook kit, the guide wire is not of even stiffness, so that in order to uncurl the pigtail, a section of the guide wire, which will be the proximal section, is stiffer and acts a little bit like a trocar. So that unlike a central line where you can just hold your guide wire and thread the catheter in, for the pleural pigtail, you have to insert a guide wire and pigtail together. Of course, you have a little bit, a centimeter or so of your guide wire sticking out the back, but as you insert, they have to go in together until probably about, you know, at least a third to halfway of the catheter, basically until the catheter is inside the pleural cavity. And this is because if you advance the catheter over the guide wire and the pigtail, which is the distal, of course, part of the catheter, hits the softer distal part of the guide wire, then it will start to curl and it will no longer be able to advance through the tissues properly. So that's the thing to remember. Once everything goes in together until you're a third to halfway in, and you usually then see some fluid already starting to come back out through your catheter hub, your pigtail hub, then you can hold the guide wire and just advance the catheter as you would in a central line standard Selbinger technique. Another little tip on advancing is that you want to advance centimeter by centimeter. You want to grab the catheter close to the chest wall and advance a centimeter at a time or so. You don't want to try to hold the catheter, pinch the catheter 3 or 4 or 5 centimeters away from the chest wall and try to shove that in. It's not stiff enough. What it may do is just bend, and once you've got a bend or a kink in the catheter, especially in the guide wire, you're no longer going to be able to use it properly to advance through tissue. So when you advance, do it about a centimeter at a time. That short section that you've got is less likely to bend under pressure. All right, so now, let's say you've got your catheter in. an important point is before you put on your dressing, personally I like to put on a transparent dressing over the pigtail catheter so that in subsequent checks and follow-ups you actually physically see the catheter for kinks and things like that, as opposed to having it under an opaque dressing that you can't see. Having said that, I always roll a small 2x2 to put just under the catheter where it's going to bend coming out of the skin. Why do I do that? Because if you stick an adhesive directly on the catheter and on the chest wall, sometimes, depending on some of the anatomies, what you might get is you might get almost a 90 degree bend of the catheter as it exits the skin, which will kink and drainage won't be as good. If you put a small little roll of a rolled up 2x2, then what you get is a curving exit of the catheter, which is less likely to kink. Once you've put a transparent dressing, I like to put lots of solidifying solid, white tape dressing on the loose catheter bits so that if there's a bit of traction, it's not going to go directly to the catheter insertion site and pull it out. So now we've got our catheter nice and secured. Now it's time to drain. So this might be connected to either a roller pump drainage system like the Topaz or a standard Pleurivac system. The question is, do we let it drain by gravity? Do we put suction on it? What do we do? That's going to depend on what you think the etiology of your pleural fluid is and how fast it accumulated and how sick your patient is. If you're putting this pigtail in to drain large effusions related to, say CHF, on someone who's decompensated relatively rapidly and who's on BiPAP and you're trying to stave off intubation, then you're probably going to put some negative minus 20 or something like that in order to try to get the fluid out fast. On the flip side, if you've got someone who's not that symptomatic and you suspect the effusion's been there for a long time, then you might want to just go with gravity drainage. One thing that does happen is the trapped lung or the pneumothorax ex vacuo. That can happen with rapid drainage, especially negative pressure drainage of large chronic effusions where the lung has lost a lot of compliance, is no longer able to expand rapidly. So if you don't have a rush to drain the fluid and it's a large effusion, then I would suggest probably giving it some time, who knows, hours or a day or so with just gravity drainage and reassess. It's a case-by-case basis, but always keep in mind that concept that the longer the pleural effusion has been there, the more the lungs tissue is compromised, and it may expand less well. And if you're forcing it to expand with negative pressure, you may induce a pneumothorax. I've had some interesting discussions with people about this, and people will argue that, well, no, there's no pneumothorax. Well, unfortunately, there has to be a pneumothorax, meaning there has to be a disruption of the visceral pleura for air to get into the pleural space, unless you let your catheter open and with negative pressure breathing, the chest cavity filled with air from the open catheter. The air has got to come from either the lung or the outside. Those are the only two options. There is no physical way that there's empty space. If you create a vacuum, the air will come. It will either come from a ruptured visceral pleura, or you will manage to entrain some air from the outside. Those are the only two options. So I know that in my procedures, I'm always very careful with not having any possible airflow in by either bending the catheter or either observing flow fluid or kinking the catheter so that air cannot come in. Yet pneumothoraces ex vacuo do happen. So that's your choice for how fast you drain the fluid. Is really depends on clinical circumstances. Once you've got your drainage done, when do you take these out? So again, it's going to depend on clinical circumstance. But one thing is, don't just rely on the fact that there's no more active drainage, because catheters get blocked. more often than you think. So you got to go back with your ultrasound machine. Yes, don't even try to do it any other way. It's a waste of time. Go back with your ultrasound machine. Take a look. Do you still have a lot of fluid? If you don't, and you know, you try to go for the most dependent areas and you don't see very much, go ahead and pull it out. I'd put the caveat that if you've put this in for a CHF and you haven't controlled the venous congestion, meaning you still have a big IVC and you've got lots of venous congestion, don't bother taking it out yet. It's going to reaccumulate. So control your venous hypertension, venous congestion, give them more Lasix, whatever you have to do. And then once you've got that under control and you don't have much fluid, then pull it out. If it's a paraneumonic effusion, once there's not much left, not likely to recur too much, go ahead and pull it out. Another tip is, do really make sure you, if you're planning on pleurodesis or something like that, do you really make sure that you check and make sure that there is minimal or no fluid left, because pleurodesis inside a pleural effusion does not work. All right, so I think that's it. I think we've covered most of the bases and the tips and pearls and little tricks for pigtails and pleural effusions. One last one is choice of the size. Free-flowing effusions, generally I like the 8.5s. If it looks like it's a chunky-looking effusion on ultrasound, or if I'm getting out on initially either purulent material or very thick material or blood, then I'll go for a 14 right away. It's a shame to have to swap over from an 8.5 to a 14 just because the 8.5 is not doing the trick. And the 14s are only slightly more uncomfortable, and by and large are really well tolerated, and again much, much better than a traditional chest tube. You've heard me harp almost, it sounds like almost against traditional chest tubes. It's just for that comfort's sake. And the one area where traditional chest tube remains clearly indicated is if you cannot visualize things properly. If you've got a trauma patient, unstable, or you don't have an ultrasound machine or something like that, you definitely don't want to be going in blind with a needle. So in that case, the traditional approach, which is blunt dissection and getting your finger in the pleura, is a much safer and better option. All right, well, that's a wrap for now. Thanks very much.